Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green for entertaining us this afternoon. It's Thursday, the 4th of November, and this is Game On. Coming up today, David Wallace and Bernard Jackman on the Leinster heavy Irish side. Andy Farrell has named to face Japan.
I would never do the squad a disservice by looking at who I'm picking, who they play for provincially. You know, we pick a team on merit, on what's right, and where the squad and the feel is at that moment in time. So this is the best side for Japan, and we go with that.
David Snaid is in studio to talk us through the Irish squad to face Portugal and Luxembourg, and we'll hear from Stephen Kenny. He'll tell us his hopes.
We want strong performance. We want to continue the level of performance that we've had in the last few windows and try and improve again and maximise the amount of points we can. And it's fantastic that we have a full house of the Aviva.
Jeff Shepherd has the lowdown on the World Series. Plus, in GAA, there's a big name exit for Mayo. While in Galway, Henry Shefflin signs up some local knowledge. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by David Snaid, journalist, and Bernard Jackman, former rugby player. Is that fair enough, Bernard? What do you go by these days?
Hanging in there.
I never thought about that, actually. No. You know, I usually just introduce you as Bernard. Right, so we have a bit of an update. Yesterday, we were talking about basketball and the fact that, and actually just youth sports in general, the fact that they there was a lot of uncertainty about what was going to happen with them because of the COVID-19. Restrictions that are still in place. So a bit of a development. Restrictions around youth basketball matches have been lifted today. The government moved to amend the rules, which meant under 18 players were unable to play indoors, and the government has agreed to address the issue of youth basketball amongst other indoor sports and altered the necessary precautions to play the games. David, this is good news for kids everywhere because, you know, we look at all the outdoor sports like the soccer and the rugby and the GAA, and, you know, they're the mainstream sports. A lot of kids play them, but there's an awful lot of kids as well out there who are not that interested in those sports, and they want to play basketball or they want to have their gymnastics competitions or whatever it is.
Yeah, you kind of get that sense of maybe kids being left behind just purely because of the sport they play. And obviously, just the health, obviously, implications, and have to go through the guidelines and stuff. But, you know, I was reading stuff that Kieran Shannon was writing about this in the Irish Examiner. He's just making that point as well. That kind of sometimes maybe if you don't play one of those major sports, there is that element maybe of almost being pushed to the side a little bit, and maybe your interests don't really matter as much. And I'll be honest, it was something I wasn't even aware of. I was even just thinking myself before, when you're saying about there, I've kind of been back playing football myself with my own kind of local team, and you kind of just take it for granted that things are beginning to get back to normal. But obviously, yeah, it's great for especially kids now at young age, because we're talking about especially young kids being able to just have that social interaction where it's not just in school and being around their friends and having those experiences again. So yeah, hopefully that bodes well.
It felt like things were starting to get back to normal, Bernard, but obviously cases are starting to rise. Although it feels these rugby games coming up and the soccer in the Aviva are going to be pretty landmark, that they're going to be full houses, and we might get that sense that things are back where they used to be. Well, obviously cases depending over the next few weeks, but it's been interesting to hear the Ireland rugby manager Andy Farrell and Stephen Kenny talking about the fact that, you know, some of their players, and Stephen Kenny, they haven't played in front of full houses before, which is, it's just a bit mad really.
Yeah, it's mad, and it's something to look forward to for sure. Just going to the basketball point, I think, you know, I've been coaching my old school team last year, and they had a very disjointed season. And anecdotally speaking to a lot of clubs, that age group, that 19-year-old bunch who had a broken season last year, the numbers have dropped off massively, so they're out of the habit of playing. And you know, for basketball to be in an extended lockdown, obviously it's worrying. So it's great to see them being back playing. But from a professional point of view, yeah, look, the players live off and feed off the energy in the crowd as well. And I mean, we've probably all been to stadiums where all you can hear is the match commentator and the officials, and it's been great to hear the players on the field and what they say to each other and stuff. But realistically, nothing compares to full houses. And I know there's Japan isn't sold out yet. There's still an opportunity to get tickets, but the week after against New Zealand, you know, should be a sellout, and I think it'll be great just to be back in a full stadium.
Yeah, and likewise with the Portugal game. Actually, now that you mention it, I was in full stadiums last weekend when I was in Paris. I was in the Racing one and also PSG. Right, well, let's get into the Ireland rugby team then, because it was announced today, and David Wallace joins us on the line, former Munster and Ireland player. David, look, we have to really start with the narrative that's coming out of the squad today, that it is quite Leinster heavy. Now, Andy Farrell was asked about it today, and he said he'd be doing the players a disservice if he was looking at locations of players when picking his team, that he needs to pick the best players. But at the same time, from a Munster point of view, are you a little bit concerned?
Look, I suppose you would be. You know, I think for many years we worried about, I suppose, the factory that Leinster have, and maybe for a few years we didn't have that strength depth coming through the academies, etc. But I think that's starting to change now, and we've seen some great new prospects coming through, so that might just take a little bit more time to come to fruition at the senior international level. But yeah, I'm sure Andy Farrell didn't have that in his mind when he was selecting the team. But I suppose, you know, when they look at the autumn series that they have coming up ahead of them, and getting off to a good start against Japan is probably going to be a really important thing. So we've got guys out in the team who are used to playing with each other and playing together, and that's going to be a big help certainly in the season, really, because a lot of those players in the squad don't have that much time under their belts. So I think that'll be a big factor, and just getting off on the right foot, because it's a difficult autumn series. You know, there's no easy games. There's usually one thrown in where you get the blood, a good number of younger players, but there's none this time around. And then you look what's ahead in next 7 or 8 months, 9 months, which you got your away games to England and France and Six Nations, then you're into a tour down to New Zealand. So it's going to be a fairly full-on international campaign over the next 7-8 months. So I think the momentum will be big in this phase of it, and that hopefully bring that into the Six Nations.
Bernard, David said on something really interesting there. We are at a critical point now for Andy Farrell and this Ireland team. You know, we're at the stage now where we're counting games down to World Cups and who they're going to be. A lot of them are going to be against New Zealand, which is quite interesting as well, because when you think about going out to play New Zealand, like, it's always a really tough test, and you're going to be playing them, is it 4 times now before a World Cup? How important will it be for them to start beating them as much as they can and try and get that confidence?
Well, look, it'd have to be competitive at home, you think, you know, to get on that plane in June and play 3 tests away to the All Blacks, I think. And that's definitely, I think, on Andy Farrell's mind, and that's why he's gone so strong this week. I think probably the area that you can question the selection is probably the bench, and just in terms of, you know, Keane Healy, Peter Manny, Conor Murray, maybe Earlsey. Just this game, could he have gone a little bit younger there? It's already a very strong team, but obviously he wants that continuity into next week, and probably feels those boys, some of them might start against the All Blacks. I mean, if he wants to go after the All Blacks lineout, Peter Manny might play. But yeah, I would like to see the likes of Ballatloon and maybe Gavin Coombs and Craig Casey even getting some game time this week off the bench. But look, as David said, they don't have an easy fixture, and he wants to give himself the best possible chance of beating the All Blacks, who look to be absolutely flying. Obviously, hammered Wales the weekend. The week before, they put 100 points on the USA, and they've blooded a lot of new talent as well, which is probably another question mark around Ireland. If you look at all the other Six Nations teams, France, England, etc., they've all new faces this November, and we're pretty much going with the tried and tested, which, you know, it makes sense in some ways, but in terms of long-term development, it would worry you a little bit.
Okay, well, he was asked about that next generation of players today. Let's hear what he had to say.
Yeah, and I get that. You know, everyone wants to see the next cab on the rank and the next exciting youngster coming through. But Gavin's been ill all week, so that's ruled him out. He's had a virus and he's not been able to train with us. And Rob Ballacoon, he's got tremendous potential, but he's been injured for a good while. You know, and he's just finding his feet, and he's come back into the squad after being involved in the summer. And some lads find their feet straight away, like Dan Sheehan, etc. And some take a little bit more time, you know. And bringing an extended squad, a bigger squad, into the Autumn Nations series is going to be great for people like Rob.
Now, just David, hearing him talking about that next generation of players there, has he done enough to bring the players through? When you think of, I think he's handed out 22 debuts over the course of 16 matches. But when it comes to progressing these players, Hugo Keenan, Caelan Doris, they seem like the only ones really that he's brought through. What are your thoughts on it?
I think he hasn't been shying away. I think as you mentioned, there's been a couple of players, but I mean it's difficult as well. Like he's trying to win matches, and you know you're playing Six Nations games. You want to be going out with full strength teams, and it probably wasn't the easiest campaign for them last year. You know, to be bloody players, and you know they needed wins, so it's difficult. But when things are going well, you know, I think you have that opportunity. The pressure is off a little bit, but. It's a performance, you know, it's a judged job and game. So, you know, he's got to win these games and you know, I suppose going out with your best team. But obviously looking for the long term, yeah, of course, building for World Cups, you need these guys to come up to speed and try and get into the team. And maybe it's a little bit unfortunate there, you know, for the likes of Kevin Coons, who obviously, had the sickness during the week and wasn't able to train. So I'd really love to see him get a good lot of game time this autumn international campaign, because, you know, he's just been immense for Munster, and he has something that kind of breaks the mould, I think, in terms of a lot of the back row players that we have. He's a big guy, but he's powerful. He gets over that gain line with ease, and obviously is a try scoring machine as well, and you know has an engine on him. So I really do think at an international level he'll really give us something in terms of getting us on the front foot, because you know you look at the games that we struggle in at times, and it's getting over the gain line. We're not the type of team that will, you know, try all these offloads and you know get in behind teams and really exploit it. We're a team that likes to go through the phases and the set piece, etc. So he is one of those players who can get you yards time and time again to put you on the back line or the forwards on the front foot and to put the defence on the heel. So yeah, I think I'd love to see lots more of him, and Craig Casey as well is an exciting player too, and he's growing and growing in stature and confidence as time goes on, and obviously Balogun with his injury woes. Was so exciting, and that try he scored against USA. So, you know, I think that was a good period as well to see some players those games over the summer. You know, I think, albeit, you know, in front of empty stadiums, but hopefully this time around, you know, we'll have fuller stadiums, and the players will get a taste of it, because some of those players, younger players, haven't got a taste of that, and it's going to be very exciting for them.
Yeah, I think when you look at Andy Farrell's selection policy, I think you have to take into account the effect it had that he was part of the old regime. So if you look at Fabien Galthié, who came in after the World Cup, he was able to have that first year, which is pretty much a free ride. He was able to make the changes, give the players the opportunities. The same with Wayne Pivac. Now, Wales had a very poor Six Nations, Wayne Pivac's first year, but allowed him to change the game plan to blood new players, and they won the Grand Slam his second year. And obviously now, like, I don't think any of us would swap the Irish squad for the French squad that Fabien Galthié has now. So potentially because Andy Farrell had that difficult 2019, was part of the World Cup failure, he probably felt under more pressure, and maybe was under more pressure to get results, you know, bit by bit, rather than actually completely, you know, bring in a new broom. And we're still at the same situation where he hasn't got enough good results to have massive credit in the bank that he can change. So we're kind of just tipping along in kind of just, you know, middle of the road kind of form. And look, this is a very good team on paper. I wouldn't criticise this team at all. Particularly, like, he's found Porter now. Porter was a bench player, now he's a starter. Kelleher is outstanding. In actual fact, this is probably the best ball carrying or ball playing pack we've had. But probably now the pressure's on. It's a bit like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Like, the talent is in this team on Saturday, but how are they going to play? Are they going to be set up properly to play? And if they're not, then we're in big trouble.
What do we need to see from them, David, to answer that question? Because it keeps popping up all the time, just the game plan that they seem to be lacking, the more expansive style of play, just that transition to the Andy Farrell team.
Yeah, there was. I mean, obviously we know what Joe brought. It sounds negative, but maybe, you know, contrived. It was very, you know, painted by numbers style where, you know, you just get through the phases and phases, and there wasn't much, I suppose, expansiveness or, you know, freedom for players to play. And I think Andy had brought that and given that to players, but then the players need to be able to come up to that mark and a bit of pressure on them if they're going to have that freedom, you know, to execute the right things at the right time. It's not just all down to Andy Farrell. I mean, if he's given a bit more freedom, I think the players have to step up too. But as Bernard said, this team on paper certainly has the ability to really do that, you know, to put the team on the front foot, you know, and play with a bit of ball skills and a bit of fleet of foot and a bit of speed and getting in behind Japan. But as we know, as we've seen, Japan are not a team to lie down. And, you know, they're going to throw everything at Ireland. So it's going to be difficult. But on paper, you would think that, you know, this Irish team should be playing, be able to play a bit more of an expansive game and move on from, I suppose, that period where everything was really structured.
Bernard, you had a really good article in the Sunday Independent about Japan at the weekend, and one of the stats that you had was in the 2019 World Cup they had 1,606 ball touches and only 51 errors, a ratio of one mistake every 31.5 touches, which by your reckoning made them the most skillful team in the world at that time.
Yeah, they're phenomenally skillful. They've got real clarity around how they want to play. It's amazing. They've shifted from under Eddie Jones in 2015. They scored 9 tries at the World Cup. Zero of them came from unstructured play. And in 2019, they'd seven from unstructured and 6 from structured. So they are the best coached attacking team in the world. They don't have the same talent as the All Blacks have. They don't have the same powers as England or South Africa have, but they're going to be a test for us. They scored 31 points against us in June. And of all the Irish coaches this week, I think Simon Easterby is the one who's going to be having sleepless nights, making sure that, you know, our defence is set. And the biggest thing about Japan is they don't care about possession anymore. They want high ball and play time, but they're very smart at tactical kicking, so they manipulate your backfield, then they find space, the cook kick chase, and then you kick back to them under pressure, and then they go at you again. So it's going to be really interesting. Obviously, you know, we got caught by them at the World Cup, and they've been unlucky in terms of having a chance to build momentum from that. But I was chatting to someone involved in their squad this week, and they're now, they've got the same coaches, they're trying to just do what they did in 2019 but do it a lot better. And yeah, they're looking forward to getting the chance to run out in the Viva.
And David,
it'll also be a great. I know that the players will be just focused on this game and winning this game and performance as well in this game. But it will be a good prep for New Zealand because of the style of play that both teams play. You know, that offloading. So in terms of Simon Easterby and his defence, you know, making sure that players are filling those channels and not allowing offloads going to players inside or outside. You know, making sure the ball is tagged in the tackle, and trying getting both those teams to try and ruck and not play the ball out of the tackle is going to be key. So it will be a perfect not training session, but a perfect preparation for New Zealand. Although, you know, we got to take this game as the most important thing at the moment.
Absolutely. And look, another interesting aspect as well, Bernard, is the Paul O'Connell factor. He's kind of had a bit more time now in their coaching. We'll probably have learned a little bit more about himself and what he's trying to achieve in there as well. So just the fact that he's going to be present, and the line-out has been another interesting talking point as well over the last while, especially since he came in. Do you think we're going to see more of the Paul O'Connell impact?
Yeah, we started to see it in June without obviously our Lions players. It seemed as if Paul and Mike Catt had connected in terms of being able to have some smart strategy in terms of our line-out attack. So Paul is very good at winning the ball, but we weren't really using it smartly. But in against America and Japan, even though neither of them were fully loaded, we there was a real joint-up strategy. And also, it's important to know, Paul is also now looking after our breakdown. So our ruck speed has improved. Mike Catt, now the pressure's on him, because I think he had a good excuse pre-Paul in that our line-out wasn't really giving us good possession, our ruck speed was slow, how do I attack, you know, with no line-out or slow ruck ball. Now he has, well, we'll see, but he had much more of both in summer. you'd imagine, you know, I would be fully confident Paul will deliver that again in November and the future. So now the pressure's back on Mike Catt to actually get our attack flowing and, you know, use the strengths we have.
What about the selection of Jemison, Gibson, Park, David, and the fact that Conor Murray is on the bench? We're talking about pressure being on people now. Conor Murray will no doubt be putting pressure on Gibson, Park. But what can we read into that? That, you know, we've heard them talk so much now about the World Cup, and that seems to be the narrative that they're looking towards that now, as opposed to nearly taking every game as it comes. How much should we read into that selection?
I wouldn't read too much into it. I don't think Connor has had too much time for Munster. Did I really need only 20 minutes off the bench or something? So, you know, he's coming into this campaign very undercooked. And you know, so I think, as I said earlier, you know, having that players that who have a bit of time under their belts, and obviously so many Leinster players in squad that are used to playing with each other. I think it's probably more down to that, and I'm sure we'll see plenty of Conor Murray over the next couple of games.
100 caps for Johnny Sexton, Bernard.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mentioned Ollie Gunnar Solskjær. He's our Ronaldo. He's keeping the the whole show on the road. And you know, I hear some people critical of the fact that he's still there, and I understand that. But he shouldn't be the one who's being criticised. I mean, all he can do is, you know, be the player he is and still is, and looks even better than this start of the season than he has for a while. So it's up to the others to catch up to him, and he is still very much a key man, and he'd be unbelievable. If we're going to beat the All Blacks next week, you'd have to believe that, you know, it's absolutely crucial Johnny Sexton plays.
David, like, you know, you've been, you wore the green for a very long time. Like, trying to get to a stage where you're evolving players, how difficult is it when it's somebody in such a key position like Sexton? Like, do you picture him being there for the World Cup?
I don't see why not. You know, I think people are only reading a bit too much into his age, it's his performance, and his desire, I suppose, to play in the green jersey, which I don't think anyone would question. And of all players, I think he's probably the one that you know has shows the most desire out in the field, nearly. But I think as well his performance, you know, as Bernard called him there, the Ronaldo of Irish rugby, he is. When he's on the field, he's talismanic, and he definitely brings the team together. But also, you know, his experience, his control, and his I think it's just determination out there. You feel much more comfortable when you see him out there, don't you? But I wouldn't have any issues with him, you know, playing the next World Cup and beyond. You look at the likes of a Tom Brady over winning Super Bowls, you know, at the age of, 44 or something, and still going strong and playing the best ability. Okay, slightly different positions and all that, but still, you know, I think people reading far too much into his age, and you know, if like you say with young players, if they're good enough, give them a start, and the same should be of you know, guys who are more experienced, let's say.
We're also ageist when it comes to sport. Bernard, the hooker, we've Ronan Kelleher getting his very first start for Ireland.
Yeah, it's at first he's been on fire. I think we've got a really nice balance. You've got two really dynamic young power players, himself and Dan Sheehan, and then you have Rob Herring, who's probably underrated in how good he is as a set-piece hooker, and I wouldn't write him off by any manner of means, and maybe he's going to be the right call for New Zealand, where we have to have a very good set-piece. But I think Kelleher is coming of age, and I just think the way the game has gone, you know, when Wally played, he was probably our only power athlete. You're looking at that pack now, it's very, very strong, very powerful, and unfortunately or fortunately in elite rugby, you know, the higher level you go up, so end of Champions Cup, international rugby, power is the most important factor in selection or in winning. So Kelleher gives us that in spades.
So David, just before we finish up, what is success for Ireland in this window?
Well, look, I suppose you would be they would be unhappy if they didn't beat Japan and Argentina. And look, New Zealand are an entity on their own. The players will certainly back themselves, but certainly a big performance. You know, you're playing at home. Let's hope for a win. But I think certainly at the minimum, I think Japan and Argentina have victories. And let's see what happens in New Zealand.
Would you agree, Bernard?
Yeah, minimum is, has to be two wins for sure. Argentina coming on the back of six defeats. They're weary, and you'd expect Ireland to be able to beat Japan, given they've only had one game against Australia and their club competition has been over for a while. So I would agree with David. Yeah, two from three minimum.
Okay, David, Bernard, thank you so much for joining us. David was speaking on behalf of Canterbury today, the official kit partner to Irish rugby. They have revealed the new Ireland rugby heritage jersey inspired by 2003's classic strip. The heritage jersey is now available via Intersport Elvery's in-store and via elvery's.ie and on canterbury.com. So, David, thank you for that. Bernard, thank you as well. And David Snaith, stay with us because we will be talking football very shortly.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, David Snaid is with me in studio and we have been talking Ireland squads. We've already done the rugby. We are now going to move on to the football. Stephen Kenny did name his squad for the upcoming games against Portugal and Luxembourg. You were at the press conference today, David. No Aaron Connolly. Seamus Coleman is back, but it seems quite low key now when there's not really anything to play for except entertainment and pride. Development?
Yeah, well, entertainment would be nice, wouldn't it?
Would be nice.
In fairness, it'd be a bit of a continuation from the last window. I was just prior to chatting, it did seem like a bit more of a relaxed press conference in the sense that, obviously, listen, for Ireland, really, for these two games, it's just a case of building on the kind of good showings of the Azerbaijan game and the Qatar friendly in last month. Like, it's the first time I can remember for a little while that kind of Stephen Kenny wasn't pressed on his future almost straight away in terms of when the squad was announced. It was the questions, understandably, were about Aaron Connolly's omission. He's one of the players who maybe at the start of the campaign kind of signalled the kind of change of intent from the manager in terms of what he was trying to do. It was Mick McCarthy who gave Aaron Connolly his debut when he was still in charge, but obviously he impressed under Stephen Kenny, and Stephen Kenny was the one who began to start him. And It's just been a really difficult time for Aaron Connolly at Brighton. He burst onto the scene a couple of years ago, scored a couple of really good goals against Tottenham, and it was coming at a point in time in Irish football, and for so long we've just been crying out for a goal scorer, and then here's like a young lad, teenager at the time, coming on and scoring for Brighton in the Premier League, and you're kind of hoping, right, this could be the start of something. And as is the way, and as tends to happen, sometimes it just doesn't go from that kind of upward trajectory. And like Graham Potter, as manager of Brighton, has been very open about kind of some of the struggles that Connolly has had in terms of just how hard he is on himself, how kind of he kind of puts himself down, he beats himself up. And we kind of got a bit of an insight into that after, well, last year when Ireland played Finland, and there was a couple of moments in the game where kind of Connolly didn't make the right choice. He went for goal, didn't square it, and kind of fronted up after, which was quite, in fairness, was really telling for such a young lad to come out and speak so publicly straight after the game and just say it was on him, but he could have done better. And it's just he hasn't played enough games, there's been injuries, and Stephen Kenny spoke about the fact that he went to see him play in the Carabao Cup against Leicester and had a conversation with him. There was a bit of confusion, obviously, because like, he hasn't played, and he has a knee heel issue that he hasn't been training with properly. I think Stephen Kenny did make the point that he could possibly have come into the squad if really needs to be, but just because he hasn't been playing enough, maybe just needs a little bit of time back at club level just to regain a bit of confidence. And hopefully a bit further down the line when the National League comes around next year, and maybe a bit of a clean slate for it when we see the best of Aaron Connolly again, because unfortunately he just hasn't materialised so far for Ireland.
Yeah, it's difficult, and as you said, I think everybody remembers those two goals against Tottenham, and then also just the maturity that he was able to speak about in the past about his own poor performances. And I think everyone would just love to see him out there scoring goals. You'd actually love to see him out there like in a full house in the Aviva against a team like Portugal as well.
Yeah, and even Stephen Kenny, like, it was really exciting. You could tell, like, kind of even when he was speaking about the fact that it's going to be sold out at the Aviva, like the decibel levels were kind of raising in his voice when he was talking. He was just getting that excitement, and it's one of those things that he spoke about even before he got the job, that like the big games, like going to big matches at Aviva Stadium and being around the ground when obviously he would have been still manager at Dundalk, and just having that sense of anticipation but going to a game. And we've kind of had a bit of a sense of it in the last little while. Like, I go back to it because I don't think it'll be understated, even from the point of view of where he was at in terms of being under pressure. But when Ireland played Serbia, and obviously 1-0 going into the last 15-20 minutes, and like it's it's not an overreaction to say it was a serious moment in time for him in terms of results haven't been going well. People are talking about will he be staying on as manager, and obviously it wasn't a full house, it was 20,000 who were able to be there, and the fans really really got behind the team and showed a kind of a sense of encouragement for them and a belief in them. And I think that kind of registered even from speaking to people within the FAO and people who will be making decisions on this when his contract is up for renewal next year. Like, that didn't go unnoticed. It didn't go unnoticed as well when the fact that in the following window, obviously the Qatar friendly, that sells out again and that there's not a seat to be had. Obviously for this friendly, for this qualifier against Portugal at home, you've got a combination of the fact that obviously people have been locked out for so long of the internationals. You've got Ronaldo coming back, but when you consider that there's nothing on the line for Ireland, like, it does kind of show where the public are with this Ireland team, and it genuinely can be, hopefully, when you see some of the players coming through, a little bit of excitement there. And when it comes next year, and we have to, because we haven't got a serious, maybe not a serious qualifier, because obviously through the Nations League you can still qualify for tournaments, but haven't got, say, a Euro qualifier until 2023 now, I think it's March time, so there's a serious amount of time there. And if Ireland can have an impressive window coming up, it'll be a happy Christmas for Stephen Kenny, it'll be a happy Christmas for the FAO, because I don't think it'd be too long in waiting for a sponsor for the men's team to come on board. So I think beforehand, if things hadn't gone well in the last window against getting that win away in Azerbaijan, the manner of the performance against Qatar and being able to blitz them, which an Ireland team hasn't done for so long, I think we would have been talking about this and framing this conversation in a completely different way about Stephen Kenny and his future. Not that the pressure's off, the pressure's always on when you're the Ireland manager, but I think people now can see where things are hopefully beginning to go with the team and the development that's there, and I think he deserves that chance to be able to see it through for at least another couple of years.
Yeah, it does feel like there is a sense of excitement around the team, and maybe it is because Portugal are coming with Ronaldo and packed full of international stars, but still, it is something to look forward to. And let's hear from Stephen Kenny. He was speaking about the fans today.
My first game as manager was just a little over a year ago, last September, and in that period, obviously, we don't sort of the COVID international period where nobody had matches. So the last couple of games, we've had half capacity. We've had amazing support against Serbia and Azerbaijan, and particularly, obviously, against Qatar in the last match, scoring 4 goals. So it's great that we're playing Portugal. Obviously, they're a world-class team, and we'll be fully tested. But we want to try and put in a strong performance and try and get results.
Yeah, it would be nice to put in a performance and to entertain the fans that will be there. A good boost to have Seamus Coleman back.
Yeah, Bernard was speaking beforehand about Johnny Sexton in terms of when he's there, kind of the comfort that brings people. I don't think you can underestimate that, and it was something that even Stephen Kenny made the point of as well, which just like the level of performance and consistency and the attitude he has around the place, like, especially when you are bringing through so many young players, like just setting that example. Everton have kind of gone through a bit of a rough ride, kind of like domestically in terms of from the early part of the season, and there's been issues even with Coleman with his injuries with the hamstring. But with that formation, with the three at the back and playing wing backs, and maybe Coleman on that right side, or possibly as a wing back, he kind of just does offer that, maybe a bit of variation. But even just, not so much even say with Seamus Coleman, but that point you're making there about kind of the anticipation for the game, like you just really do hope that Ireland can build on what had happened in the last window. And like, some people will dismiss the fact that, yeah, it was a friendly against Qatar, but like, when was the last time you see an Ireland team, no matter the level of opposition, just roll them over and so comprehensively, kind of, see, just going through things obviously in preparation over the next few days for writing about the Ireland squad, but obviously Callum Robinson or CR7 or CR7 but
I've heard that before.
Obviously, listen, he had a great window, a couple of really important goals away from home, and then scores that hat-trick. Could be a slight issue in the fact that he's kind of been in and out a little bit now at West Brom since then, hasn't scored in 5 or 6 games. But if you're looking for maybe a bit of a, I don't know, kind of how he deals with things, even going into the last campaign, I don't think he scored for about 7 or 8 games. This is a fellow who hopefully doesn't let his confidence get dented too much. And considering that Aaron Connolly is out of the squad, because it shouldn't be forgotten when we did play Portugal in Faro and came within a whisker away of having a really good result, like, that was one of Connolly's better games for Ireland. Like, there was again issues with his final product which did let him down, but playing on the counter attack and exposing Portugal down that left side, where I think, obviously, which is probably understandable from their point of view, they're going to take an Ireland a little bit lightly. I don't think there'll be as much space, even though the Aviva pitch is so massive. I think they realise that Ireland can actually devise a plan to hurt them on the counter-attack. So it's going to be a little bit different as how, obviously, with Callum Robinson and how he plays in the pockets and finding those bits of space, and if he'll maybe start up front with Adam Eade, that remains to be seen as well, because again he's been, hasn't really got a chance that at Norwich since at all really this season, obviously off the bench. But like, I don't think it'd be forgotten for Stephen Kenny either, just how much trouble Adam Eade caused Ruben Diaz and Man City. Like, I remember being in the stadium, and it's not a massive stadium, and you could see Eade and Pepe kind of losing the head with each other, because you had this young lad and he was running them ragged at times. He was making really clever runs. It was at times which never really see it at that level, where the centre back was crossing over each other and not knowing what to do, especially for that level. So it's, I think, obviously Stephen Kenny has options coming into this, and it's just about whether or not you can get that performance out of them, because the roof will be lifted off the place if Ireland can get a result against Portugal, even though World Cup qualification is unfortunately beyond them.
Yeah, it really will, and we will have live commentary here on Game On as well that night. Right, before we finish up, good win for Liverpool last night. They are already through to the knockout stages of the Champions League, 2 games to spare.
No, very impressive. Very impressive. Like, we've already topped the group now, haven't we? 12 points. Like, it's pretty much probably been exactly what Jurgen Klopp would have wanted, especially after the weekend when they threw a 2-goal lead away against Brighton, which is very kind of very surprising considering what they had done to United the previous weekend and the form they were on. Like, we were just chatting about this last week, in the sense that, like, it looks as if it's going to be, obviously, like, how exciting it's going to be between Liverpool, Man City and Chelsea. But I think it showed again, like, they're not infallible. Like, they're going to have these little blips throughout the season. But just, we're talking about full houses and crowds. Like, I think once Liverpool got ahead in any game at Anfield, but especially seems to be in European games, it's almost like teams are, like, scared stiff of them. Like, they're frightened of them. And, like, even the fact that Klopp came out and said that he just felt it was the right thing to do to take off Sadio Mane, because he said he was in control of what was happening, but he just didn't want to risk and he'd let go of players maybe getting in his head or causing. But, like, being able to take off one of your best players just shows you where Liverpool are at the moment.
Getting in his head, or maybe just, like, taking the legs from under him. There was a lot of that going on as well. There are plenty of Europa League games as well. Some of them are on right now. West Ham are trailing Genk 1-0, and it is David Moyes' 1,000th game in charge. Right, we're going to take a very quick break. We're going to have a League of Ireland chat towards the end of the show, so please do stay with us. Dave will be back with the GAA very shortly.
Game On 2FM with Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome back. Now it is time to turn our attention to Gaelic games, and RTÉ's Damien Lawler is with us on the line. Damien, we're a little bit away from the season, but there is still plenty of news happening. We're following on from the shock announcement of Henry Shefflin being appointed Galway manager to him formulating a backroom team.
That's right, Marie. I suppose people were probably interested to see what sort of a backroom team he put together. I think people were trying to maybe go back over the years and see who Henry would have been maybe connected to. And Damien Joyce possibly is one of those. Both men went to WIT, played hurling down there as well. And he has been announced as a coach selector with Henry's backroom team. And Kevin Lally has been appointed as well. Kevin Lally had a great innings with St. Thomas's, Marie, when they won a number of Galway titles and went further afield as well. And I think on top of that then as well, we all knew that Richie O'Neill would probably be most likely to accompany him. He won All-Ireland Club titles in 2019 and 2020 with Henry as well. So the acquisitions of Joyce and Lally were announced by the Galway board late last night. And I think Joyce brings a wealth of experience at intercounty level as well, because he captained the team when he was playing himself, Marie, and he worked very closely then with Micheál Donoghue when Galway won the All-Ireland back around 2017. And in fairness to Kevin Lally, I think he managed Thomas's 3 county titles on the trot. But he also had a big involvement with the Galway Miners last year. They won the All-Ireland title and he was coach. And then an interesting thing about the whole aspect of Galway and the succession planning is Brian Hanley has been put in as the under-20 manager. Brian takes that job after stepping up from the minors, and he takes it on a 3-year term. Jeffrey Linsky was in the frame for the senior job, so he's not involved, but if you were to look at it down the line, Brian Hanley's a very, very impressive man, a very impressive manager. He also managed the Westmeath Hurlers maybe about around a decade ago. And I think if you're looking at the succession plan down the line, like, who knows what will happen, but certainly Brian Hanley would be in the frame for it, even at this early stage.
Sounds like that Shefflin and Galway have their ducks in a row for what's coming down the track. And it's not all good news, though, for the West, because Mayo are now going to be without Oisín Mullen. He is set for an AFL move and it's going to be an absolutely huge loss.
Well, it's a seismic loss, really, Marie. Not just to Mayo, but to the game of Gaelic football as well, because like this is the young footballer of the year, but also he's the... I was going to say, like, he's one of the most exciting players to emerge in recent years, but he has emerged. And he's the go-to man, really, for that Mayo defence. Like, he's man-marked. He took on Dean Rock and Conor McManus and did good jobs in them. He's off now to Geelong on a two-year contract, we believe, as an international rookie. There have been hopes in Mayo, I think, that staying put for the time being to try and get that elusive All-Ireland title would be enough of a magnet to keep him at home. But I think the suitors from down under have been after rushing for quite some time, Marie, and maybe COVID might even have put a stop to that move potentially happening earlier. Oisín's a student at NUI Galway. He's a top, top defender, so he had plenty going for him here. But I think Geelong, they have the likes of Zach Dewey and Mark O'Connor on their books. Stephen Oakenborough only came back to Kerry recently. And I have to say that Oisín Mullen's loss, if he does move, will be probably as significant and as monumental a loss as any county has experienced over the past decade. And I speak from experience in my own county when we lost Colin O'Riordan, and I've seen Cork lost Kieran Sheehan when he was at his pomp as well. And Kerry lost Tommy Walsh, and I think the Tommy Walsh that they got back was still an unbelievable servant, but had gone through an awful lot in terms of injuries. But Oisín had been tracked by AFL clubs for quite some time now, and he's made the shortlist of several clubs. And just massive, massive loss for his side now as they look to regroup from the disappointment of the last few weeks and get going again. You're going to be down a big, big lieutenant at the back now, Marie.
Yeah, it feels like the hill looks a little bit steeper for them for next year. And just staying with the West, which is all West today, Damien, Sligo, they are going to be without former Australian rules player Red Oak Murphy. We're talking about big losses. I mean, he's a big loss for them as well, the Sligo football.
Well, he's a standout player for them, Marie. And like, I mean, I was just looking at kind of his thoughts on it, and he's just saying, I'm with DCU, I'm with my club, there's plenty going on there. We didn't get a great innings out of it last year with just one game. And if you think back about it, the year previous, they withdrew. At the GPA's press conference to enhance Proposal B a couple of weeks ago, Marie, I was chatting to Mickey Quinn from Longford, and he was warning about this. Mm-hmm. That if the Proposal B didn't get through, there would be a general drip-off and drop-off of players. And Mickey even touted the possibility of down the line emerging counties or weaker counties, should I say, having to possibly amalgamate to kind of form regional sides if the structures stayed the same. Now, I probably can't see that happening anytime soon, if it ever happens at all, but I can definitely see what Red Oak Murphy did today, translating itself to other counties around the country who are struggling at Division 4 and Division 3, there would be a general sense of apathy every November if those counties got a draw that they simply couldn't get out of the province with. And if you look at your own county, Clare, and as really impressive and all as you have been for the last 10 years, I think you've drawn Kerry nearly every year for the last four or five. And how are you supposed to surmount that psychologically? Now, in fairness to Clare, they have done that, and they've really used the National League to go up through the tiers, and they've got to an All-Ireland quarter-final and done well in qualifiers. But for most counties where they might not have a Colin Collins or they might not have that bunch of players coming through, I think you're going to see more and more players like Red Oak Murphy just saying, hang on, I'm not getting a huge amount of this for what I'm putting in. I love football, but there's a little bit more to my life as well. And maybe that's what we see more of now, Marie.
Yeah, it does feel like it is we're going to be talking about this quite a bit over the next few months, Damien, before things do kick off again. And just on COVID, because we're obviously seeing and hearing that cases are rising. Is there any concerns within the JA hierarchy at the moment that the cases are starting to go up?
Well, look, I suppose in general it's not good news anyway, Marie. And I think that, you know, it wouldn't be a positive development, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's any massive urgency in that. I think the pre-season competitions in a lot of places won't go ahead. I think it'll be a very conservative return to play once more. You'll probably have to get at least five to six weeks, Marie, to do a pre-season before you get back. But you'd imagine that maybe 5 weeks after Christmas, you could potentially look at starting a National League again. And I guess we're quite a bit away from that period at the moment. But I would say the GAA have been quite satisfied to get two championships run off. Mm-hmm. There have been disappointments along the way with the likes of Sligo withdrawing, of course. But primarily they've got there. They will be looking at the club championships now. Dressing rooms are back open again. And I think they'll be happy enough to run off the club championships. And I think if anything was to arise, Marie, before Christmas, it might result in the provincial club championships maybe being halted for a little while and to resume them later in the new year than was planned. But no, there's no great urgency at the moment. But that's not to say that they're not keeping an eye on things. I'd say right now every inter-county manager is waiting for guidelines on when they can go back training as a unit. There's a lot of counties waiting to implement their new systems. So we gotta wait and see what happens there. But no great urgency at the moment, but it wouldn't be a positive with those rising case numbers, for sure.
You'd have to just nearly expect that over the coming months and coming years that there are going to be cases in squads, and that's just the way it is.
They've treated it all along, right from the very start, as a fluid situation, and they've preempted quite a bit, and they've been conservative in the returns to play. I don't think there's any massive pressure at the moment, Marie, because their major championships have been played off and the club thing is ticking away nicely. So I suppose they won't look too far ahead just at the moment, whilst also keeping an eye on it.
Right, Damien, as always, thank you so much for joining us. That brings us along nicely to Jeff Shepherd, who joins us on the line. Because, Jeff, I wanted to start with Aaron Rodgers, as I always want to start with Aaron Rodgers when I'm talking to you. And he has tested positive for COVID-19.
Yeah, he has. And so he is going to be out this week. And, you know, they just beat the Cardinals last week in the big Thursday night game. They're going to play the Chiefs this week, and he'll be out. So you're going to get Jordan Love, the backup, who has kind of been at this, you know, the other guy at the center of all the controversy surrounding Aaron Rodgers and why he's, you know, didn't report to camp and all that this summer. And it's seemed like he wants to get traded. So Rodgers tested positive. So the thing, Marie, that comes into play now is he has not been wearing his mask, and he is unvaccinated. It is not that he's vaccinated and he tested positive. He is apparently unvaccinated. And so there's a whole other level of, you know, protocols and things that players have to go through. And, you know, the team is going to have to answer some questions now about why was he not wearing mask at all the press conferences? And, you know, was he wearing mask in the rooms all the time when he was around other players? And so I think there's going to be more to this story that will likely come out in the next couple of days.
Okay, well, we will keep an eye on that. The Braves captured the first World Series since 1995. It must be massive news over there.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, sometimes, I mean, you know, look, you're a sports fan. You see things like this happen all the time. You know, sometimes the best team in the league maybe doesn't win the championship. They run into a team of destiny. And it certainly feels like that's kind of what the Braves were this year. You know, the Major League Baseball has it, you know, they play 162 games. They have the All-Star game somewhere around, you know, mid to late July every year. The Braves had a losing record at the All-Star break, okay? And just got hot at the end of the season with even their best player getting injured and going down and not playing in the postseason. And they come out and they win the World Series in six games over the Astros. They, you know, beat the Dodgers, who were phenomenal. I think they won 105 games or something like that this year. And then the Astros won 95 games. And here come the Braves, and they just get great pitching and unbelievable hitting, and they win the World Series in, you know, 4-2. So first title since 1995.
Pretty amazing stuff. I'm not even sure how to introduce this next story. I don't know where to start, so I'm just going to say, Chef, tell me about the monkey story.
Okay, I'm going to reread the sentence that I sent in the email, because it just has, that's really the only way I know how to explain it, okay? But this is absolutely captivating people that spend too much time online, and I'll just put it that way, okay? So here we go. The pet monkey of University of Texas assistant football coach Jeff Banks and his girlfriend, who was a former exotic dancer that went by the stage name of the Pole Assassin, allegedly bit a child at a Halloween party last Sunday.
Okay. And that has gone viral, I'd imagine.
Well, yes. Now, hopefully not the bite, but yes, the story. So, again, there's a football coach at the University of Texas. He and his girlfriend live in this neighborhood. They were having a Halloween party. They had some people over and some kids over from the neighborhood. And a child, like an 11 or 12-year-old kid, went into the backyard and apparently went into an area where this, they have a pet monkey, where the monkey lives. And the kid put his hand into this area and the monkey bit him, allegedly. I'm going to keep saying allegedly because it's not been proven just yet. And then it just comes out that, you know, she has this previous life. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And it's just layer after layer. And it's just an interesting story.
Right. Well, never a dull moment. Jeff Shepherd, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Now, we're going to cross over to John Kenny, who is at the Louth Derby between Drogheda United and Dundalk. John, what an act to follow.
Yeah, sold-out signs are up for this crucial County Louth derby tonight. Drogheda face into their third game in less than a week. Indeed, the home side, who are a part-time outfit, playing four games in 9 days, which is hardly fair, all of which comes about because of a call-up to the Republic of Ireland under-21 squad. Drogheda are currently sixth. They're 2 points and one place ahead of Dundalk in the battle to avoid that dreaded promotion relegation playoff. It's their fourth and final league meeting between the sides of the season. Dundalk has won two of those. Drogheda, though, won the other. That was an away win in August at Oriel Park. We got the Drogheda team news. They're without 9-goal Chris Lyons, while Jake Hyland, sent off with an in-lil draw at Finn Harps, is suspended. Still waiting on the Dundalk team. They're going to have 600 supporters in the ground tonight and a full head in the game park. They're missing, though, Raviskas Jurkovskis, who is out with a family bereavement. So a lot on the line for the 7:45 kickoff. We know Shamrock Rovers are ready. Marie are the champions and worthy champions as well. But there's a battle obviously going on for the European places. But down at the bottom, that's where the real battle is. Longford already gone, but above that, a real scrap to avoid that promotion relegation playoff.
Okay, John Kenny, thank you so much. Enjoy the game. David, just before we finish up, Tottenham Hotspur are in Europa League action against Vitesse. You have some team news?
Just looking here now, I think, well, only a couple of changes since from the defeat against Man United, but I suppose the big news, if you're an Ireland supporter, and I know Stephen Kenny was interested in seeing what would happen, is the fact that Matt Doherty doesn't start. He's on the bench. You're kind of looking at from, like, obviously thinking this with an Ireland hat on, and Matt Doherty, and it's probably last chance to Leon here now for him in his sports career. You would have thought he might have done a bit better under Nuno, considering that they worked together at Wolves. But yeah, and no surprise that Conte is going for Son, Kane and Lucas, considering when Lucas got taken off, that kind of seemed to be the death knell for Nuno with the hierarchy there, considering the fans all boo them. And yeah, it's just going to be interesting times now for Spurs under Conte, probably the manager that a lot of Man United fans would have been hoping might have replaced Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah, be interesting to see how it goes. David Snaith, thank you so much for joining us. That is all we have time for this evening. We'll be back tomorrow. Tara Kumar is up next.
With Green Farms. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farms on the go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide.